Okie dokie. All right, we're going to just finish up the story, and then I'm going to take care of Brad. And if you have a question, a car question, you can stand in line because it won't take long. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. So Dave Martin from Martin's Auto now has a cold air kit in front of him. And the cold air kit, folks, if we draw warm air from your hood, your engine area, and send it to the motor, it doesn't carry as much fuel as cold air does. So a cold air kit simply goes to the front of the grill of the car, and now we have good cold air being aspirated and being forced down the throat of your engine. Most new cars have that system in it, but in this particular case, somebody had modified it and installed this. Dave calls the company and says, I got a barrel code, and the guy starts laughing, and he goes, yeah. He says, is that inner tube still there? And Dave says, I don't know what you're talking about. And he says, take the ductwork apart, and there should be a tube within a tube, an air tube at the mouth of this thing. There's something that's about 3 feet long. No, 2 feet long. And he says, see if there's a tube within a tube. And Dave says, no, there isn't. And he goes, well, he says, I'll send you one. And he says, that'll fix your problem. So Dave calls the owner, and he says, hey, who put this cold air kit in? And the owner says, I did. And he goes, well, it's missing a tube. And he goes, yeah, he says, after I put it in, then something happened and it blew off, or I didn't get a clamp tight or whatever. And there was this one piece of plastic tube, orange, that was broken and all kind of smashed up because the car ran over it. So he says, I just threw it away. And Dave said, okay, well, they're going to send me a new one. And if there's a charge for it, I'm going to charge you. I'm going to put it in and that should cure your problem. And the guy goes, oh, that can't be it. Dave says, well, we think it is. So he puts the tube in, the car's fixed. So the customer had created the problem, but we had never seen that before. But here's the key. Dave had the sense to look at this aftermarket device and investigate it, and then he looked on the internet and figured out that there's an inner tube that's not here. And then he called the manufacturer, and they go, yeah, that'll set a better barrel code. Boom, we're done. So Dave Martin's Auto gets my unadulterated admiration for him pulling a rabbit out of his hat, and frankly, folks, there's probably not but two other shops in town, and mine is not one of them, two other shops in town that may have had that tenacity to go after this problem that nobody else can fix. Brad, good morning. How can I help you this morning?
Good morning. Hey, I just bought my son a Lexus, and it's an LS400. 1998.
Okay.
And it's the people before him had just replaced the timing belt. What's happening is when we start the car, there's no smoke coming from the tailpipe.
Okay.
And we'll let it sit overnight. When we get back in the car, drive the car, go to a store, stop for maybe about 15, 20 minutes, we turn the car on and it blows out smoke.
What color?
But when there is a check engine light for the catalytic converters.
Okay, I'm not interested in that. Stop for a minute. What color is the smoke?
Okay.
What color is
it? It is white.
Okay. Okay.
But it doesn't last. There'll be a plume of smoke when we start the car after doing it for a while.
Okay.
But when we start it, if it was overnight, it doesn't blow out.
Okay. Okay. Well, if it's running rich and it has an abundance of fuel, it's going to be black. And if it's transmission fluid being aspirated by the engine, it's going to be white. And if it's running with way too much fuel, it'll be gray and black. And if it's blue, it's oil. And so I think what I would do if I was that is I would pressure test the cooling system because the white smoke, when you park the car, the cooling system has 16 pounds of pressure in it. If we have a combustion leak,
okay,
if something's wrong, we're going to squirt a little bit of coolant into one cylinder. And then when you start it up, that cylinder is going to consume that antifreeze, turn it to a white smoke, and send it out the tailpipe, and it will be short-lived. Because you shut it off, the cooling system has 16 pounds of pressure, and it forces, because the motor's not running anymore, that 16 pounds of pressure will overcome 130 pounds of compression. So it's easy. So
okay.
Is there any are you adding coolant or water to the overflow on a regular basis, or have you had it long enough to do that?
I've probably have gone through about 5 tanks of gas, and it's not we haven't had to fill up the antifreeze.
Okay, good. And in this period of time, you haven't had any problems where the temperature gauge has exceeded 3/4 or anything like that?
No, it's all sitting center.
Okay, and 1/2 to 3/4 is normal. That's okay. And you're not. And if it were a transmission problem where we're sucking fluid out of the transmission, you'd have white smoke pretty much all the time. So I'm trying to work around, okay, you know, the symptoms that you have. I think if I were you, is I would have somebody pressure test the cooling system. This is what, and you can go rent it if you want. Go to the auto parts store and say, I need a pressure tester. You're going to put it on the radiator. The engine's cold.
Okay.
And then you're going to look at the cap, and it says 16-pound cap. And you're going to pump it up to 16 pounds of pressure, and you're going to walk away. You're going to come back an hour later, and it better be 16 pounds. If it isn't 16 pounds, then you've got a leak. Do you have a leak external? You look underneath the car. If there's a drip, fix that first. If there is no drip and you lost 4 pounds, 5 pounds, 6 pounds of pressure, then when you start it up, it's going to run like bad, and then it's going to clear up.
Okay.
And that cylinder's full of water because we forced the water in there. That cylinder's got water.
Right.
It'll run poorly, and then it'll magically clear up. And then you're going to have a tough time because the repair could be $2,000 or $3,000. The other thing you could do is use a sealer. There's a particular sealer that many of us use, but there's a process that must be followed. So I tell people, I'm not telling you, because everybody's going to pour it in and think it's going to be magic. That's not how it works. You got to read the directions. You got to flush this thing 2 or 3 times. You got to put it in. Then you got to go drive it for X amount of miles. And there is a long procedure, but when done properly, it virtually works 95% of the time. So,
okay.
And I think that's where you got to start. Okay?
And where do I get that sealer from? Well, auto parts store, or
it's in an orange bottle. But if you don't follow the directions, but I don't want you to do the sealer first. I want to make sure that it runs bad, which means now we know that we're putting water in one of the cylinders. The next thing that has to be done is we have to find out which cylinder it is, and then we redo the pressure test with the spark plug out of that cylinder. And then when we tap the starter, all this water comes out. Bingo! We got it. Now we do the sealer. So you're a long way from the sealer right now. What part of town do you live in?
But it gives me insight of how to start troubleshooting this.
Yeah, no, that's my job. I'm pretty good at verbalizing what you do first, second, and third. So if you have any questions, Mark at marksalem.com.
Okay, I appreciate it, Mark.
Thank you, Brad. 602-508-0960. We have 5 lines available. You can grab one if you want, if you have a car question. If you and your wife argue about a car, or argue about this, or argue about that, then just call me Judge Judy. I can handle those. Typically, one party or the other is going to hate me at the end of the deal, but I'm a big boy with broad shoulders, so I don't care. So I'm also a marriage counselor, in case you didn't know that. So if you do have a car-related problem, you and your wife, or the wife and her husband, I'm really good at that. 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be right back. Attention, everybody. If you live near I-17 and Deer Valley Road and you don't have a repair shop, I'd like to suggest one to you, Action Auto Repair. And it's owned by Tom, and he's been around since 1983. We've been friends before that. You see, folks, if you're in the industry for 20, 30 years, you're usually doing a good job, because the bad guys, they're usually gone in a year or two. They lose business, and then the creditors aren't being paid, and they bought a new motorhome for their family and stuff like that. So the guys that have been in business 20, 30, 40, 50 years, they're good. They know what they're talking about. And Tom at Action Auto is one of those. I-17 in Deer Valley. The phone number is 602-508-0960, but we got Larry, Paul, and Gary, and we're going to do Larry first. Larry, how are you?
Hi, good morning, Mark. I have a 2017 Nissan Juke, 100,000 miles, and when I'm near the freeway, when I drive on the freeway the first 5-6 miles, runs, everything's fine. But then after that, in between 60 and 75 miles an hour, the front end starts to shake. And when I take my foot off the gas for a split second, it smooths out again, and then seconds later, it starts to vibrate and shake again.
Okay, I'm 75 to 80% sure you have a bad axle.
Well, I brought it into the a shop, and they rebalanced the wheels.
Well, wait a minute. Stop, Larry. Did that fix it?
No, it did not.
Okay, well, then we don't need to discuss it. Because the vibration on a tire is there all the time. So when you hit 55, 57, 61, and the car starts vibrating and it's shaking like crazy, and then you slow down or even speed up and it goes away, then that's a symptom of a tire. But you don't have the symptom of a tire. You have a symptom of a bad front axle.
I see. It has two axles, I guess, one on each side.
Yeah. And it would be pretty easy for somebody to crawl underneath there, or somebody that knew what they were doing, and grab a hold of both of those axles. And I'm quite sure that half the guys I know can crawl underneath that or put it on a rack and put their hands on the axle and shake the axle and tell you which one's bad.
Uh-huh, and they did say the front axles are starting to leak.
Okay, well, I hate the word weep. You know, I fire people for saying weep. If you're not man enough to say it's leaking, and you say it's weeping, then I'm covering my butt by saying it's weeping. Weeping where? What's it weeping?
Uh-huh.
So, no, I don't like that. That's like your tires are worn. I know, but can I take my family with three young kids and my wife to Disneyland? Your tires are worn. I hate that. So sit down hard somewhere. What part of, do you have a shop that you use?
I went to Pep Boys.
Okay. Like I said, do you have a repair shop that you use? Where do you live?
McKellop, East Mesa, McKellops and Wrecker.
Thompson's Auto Repair, Stapley and Main Street. Thompson's Auto Repair, Stapley and Main Street. He'll show you what's wrong with your car. I mean, he's going to charge you a checkout fee. And if you have him do the job, then typically they roll it into the ticket. But Thompson's capable. He's at Stapley and Main Street. He's a good guy.
Right. Thank you for the help.
Okay. Good luck to you. Paul, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hi there.
Hi.
You there?
Yes, sir.
Oh, okay. Thanks. My issue is I have a 2013 Ford F-150 Turbo EcoBoost. And the other day, the low oil light came on, or oil level low light came on, and so what happens is when I drive it, it goes away, everything, but when I come to a stop, you know, or park, the light comes on and it dings. As soon as I take off again, it goes away. Any clue on that?
You haven't pulled the dipstick yet?
Oh, no, I did. I'm sorry about that. Yeah, it had, and it was just a little bit low on oil. I added some, but every day, and I even brought it to a mechanic, and it seems he did everything except test the sensor or repair.
Okay.
But the guy was a clown. Anyway, I won't bore you with the details, but I just had to get it out of his shop. But anyway, that's
okay,
where
well, stop. Just answer. This is question and answer time, okay? Where was the oil level exactly on the dipstick? You have the add mark and the full mark. Where was the oil level when you first looked at it?
It was about 7/8, you know, to full, just a, you know, an eighth low, if that.
Yeah, okay, 7/8. If you're going to divide it in between the add mark and the full mark, then 7/8 is just a tad over the add mark. Is that what you're saying?
No, it's a tad under.
Okay,
it's a tad under the add mark.
How much did you add? How much oil?
About half a quart, but it's now just a little above.
Okay. Well, the add mark is 1 quart low, so you should have just added a quart. If you want to, obviously you're just interested in guessing. So if you're interested in guessing, then I would bring it up to the full mark and then I drive it for a while. And if you still got the low oil, you have a low oil level light, not an oil pressure light. There's two different sensors
right.
for that. So at that point, you're going to have okay. to have somebody go in, if that's what you instruct the shop to do, that, you know, I want you to replace the low, whatever tells the light to come on, the low oil level, I want you to fix that. But I'd be careful about that because it may not be that. There's just some diagnostics
yeah.
that needs to go along with this. And so you're not going to find somebody who's going to sit down really, really hard on the repair of this because it's risky to do that. So there's a little bit of, there's a little bit of, how many miles are on it?
Oh, 168.
Okay, so it's been around the world six times. It's been around the equator mm-hmm. six times. Is the oil clean?
Yeah.
Okay, so it's been changed on a regular basis, and when you drain it, it doesn't come out like big globulars of black tar?
No, I don't do the changing, but I change it every 3 months.
Okay. Well,
so I have it changed.
Okay. All right, well, this... You know, there's a diagnostic procedure to determine what's going on. What you're representing is it's a low-level, oil low-level problem. We need to make the determination of whether it's a low oil pressure problem. And then you need to read
okay.
your owner's manual to make sure that we're talking about, because it's two different issues, two different diagnostic procedures, and two different repairs. So low oil level or low oil pressure, that's what you need to find out. Okay, thank you. Thank you, Gary. Hang on. I'll get you on the other side of the break, but I got to take it right now. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock, we're going to go till noon talking about cars, and we have four lines open right now, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, 508-0960, and you can ask a car question. Gary, thank you for holding as long as you have. How can I help you?
Yeah, Mark, I've got a 59 Buick LeSabre with brand new tires, new brakes all around. Blackwell put the brakes on. They're really good. I've noticed when I drive it now, I don't drive it very often, but I drive it. When I turn, there's like a squealing on the tires, and I wasn't sure what that could be or not.
Well, it typically would be an alignment problem, and that's because one tire is fighting the other. So as you turn right, the outer tire and the inner tire have two different arcs to make a right turn. And if one of them is out of whack, like the right front tire on a right turn kicks out too far, then you're going to kind of drag that tire.
Well, I was looking at two vertical members on both sides of the front end, about 7 inches long, with rubber grommets on them.
Those are control arms.
Is that what that is, those vertical members are control arms?
Aren't they triangular? They have two bushings on the engine side, the frame side, and then just a ball joint on the other side.
Oh no, there's a really long horizontal member attached to 2 7-inch vertical members on both sides.
Okay.
With rubber grommets that go down to the bottom part of the front end there.
So it looks like you have a straight axle across the front of that. It sounds like, and well, let me ask you this: Did you get this after somebody did some repair on it?
Drive it like once a month, and you know it's old, and I notice those grommets are getting dry and kind of
okay.
loose.
No, you can't go in that direction when you're diagnosing a car problem. You just can't do that because you'll spend. I mean, if you go in and start replace, and you call them grommets, but they're probably grease boots. If you start going in there and just replacing things willy nilly, I mean, to rebuild the front end, if it's a straight axle like I think it is. If to rebuild the kingpins on both sides and replace those grommets that you call, but they're really grease boots, it's going to cost you a lot of money. I think that one of the two front tires is not in perfect synchronization with the other one. Were you happy with Blackwell's work?
Oh yeah, he does great work. I was going to go back to him, but I wanted to get your opinion first
okay.
on what it might be.
Can you make it happen all the time?
Yeah, it does now. It didn't used to. So,
okay.
All right.
So here's how you do it. You call and make an appointment and say, you know, I talk to Aaron and say, you know, I really need somebody to take a ride real quick. I promise not to take them for a ride forever. I promise to just, I can make it happen. I've been practicing making it happen. I know exactly how to make it happen. And I prefer Tom Blackwell. That's what I would do if I were you.
Yeah.
And I need somebody with just a small growth of hair on their head. I need somebody that's a little well-versed. I need somebody that remembers Terry Roosevelt as the president, and it's been around cars for a long time. And I'm thinking that Blackwell, we're not going to drive around for an hour and a half while I try to make it happen. I've learned how to make it happen all the time. And I think what you're going to end up doing is a line in the front end. That's what I think.
What's your opinion on switching to a dual chamber master cylinder for safety?
Well, that's always a good idea, but there's a hell of a lot of us that have alive that were born and raised with single cylinder master cylinders. And here's the good news. The good news is before the master cylinder fails, there's a lot of symptoms. People ignore the symptoms. And then they go, oh, I almost died. Well, if you'd have just paid attention at the very beginning, you wouldn't have had this problem. You got a leak at the back of the master. It's leaking on the floorboard inside and outside the car. The pedal kind of goes to the floor gently, and you let go and hit it again, and now it's firm, and you go, okay, it was just a burp. Well, people ignore all the symptoms. And so, frankly, I haven't changed the single master on any of my old cars. I just prefer to have them as original as possible, but you can discuss that with Blackwell. But the answer to your issue is splitting that system. You'll have to put a proportioning valve in there so that we can do 60% of the brakes pressure to the front and 40% to the rear. Because right now you have 100% to the front and 100% to the rear, but your Buick may have a proportioning valve, and if it does, then yes, you can just swap the master cylinder, and there's a little bit of plumbing that needs to be done.
One of the questions, what PSI would you recommend for the tires on that thing?
What does it say on the side of the tire?
I don't know. They're American-made. You know, the company that makes all those classic car tires,
sure.
You know?
They're going to say on the maximum side, it's going to say maximum inflation, 32 PSI, and it's going to say at 2,100 pounds. Whatever the maximum inflation on the side of the tire, that, if you want a little softer ride, just soften it up 2 or 3 pounds. But the inflation of the tire on every tire that's made in the whole wide world is written on the side of the tire. And I don't care what kind of load you're going. I don't care how fast you're going. I don't care about any of that. It says maximum inflation. They know the tire's going to get hot. They know you're going to hot rod the car. They know you're going to go to Tucson from Phoenix in the middle of the summertime. All of that's dialed in. The side of the tire right close to the wheel will say maximum inflation, and the tire carries this much load. So just I run everything. When you were riding your bicycle, did you have fun riding your bicycle when the tires were flat, or did you have fun riding your bicycle?
No, that's too much work.
Exactly, that's my point. So that inflation is okay, and people, the old guys go, Mark, you're wrong. Okay, tell me why I'm wrong. Well, if you air up the tire, it's going to wear the center of the tire out. No, it doesn't. It never did. And, you know, I don't know. I probably move 100 tires a month. So, you know, I'm not a discount tire by any stretch of the imagination. But if the tire is cold, the maximum inflation is an appropriate, and as far as I'm concerned, the most appropriate inflation you should use. Now, here, think about this. We have two tires on the axle. And each one of the tire carries 2,000 pounds. There is a chart you can get, and it says if it's 2,000 pounds, now we got to add Dad and Mom is in the passenger seat of the car. So we factor all that out, and we find out that with the two of you, it's 2,300 on the left and 2,200 on the right. So now we know. Now we go to the charts, and it says, put 34 and a third pounds in the dad side, and put, you know, that's ridiculous. The maximum inflation on the damn thing is 35. Just use 35, and if it grows to 37, it's okay, because that's dialed in with the tire. As the tire gets hotter, the inflation goes up. Yeah, that's why we set them cold. That's why we set them cold.
Yeah.
And don't tell your wife I made that joke either.
Well, thanks a lot for the help, Mark.
Okay, good luck to you. Thank you. 602-508-0960 is the phone number. I think we have all five lines open. 602-508-0960. Oh, do we have somebody?
Nope, the lines are open.
Oh, the lines are wide open, and we're going to do another hour. So, folks, car repair is pretty easy. What makes it tough is you. Because you ladies let your husband tell you what to tell the shop to fix. You don't tell the shop what's wrong. You don't describe what's wrong. You don't use words like it pulls hard left, it's got a bad vibration. The next question the shop's going to say is, describe the vibration. What we want to hear is, Oh, the vibration I feel in the seat of my pants. Oh, I just want to hug you when you say stuff like that. That is so cool because that's what I need. The vibration in the seat of your pants is in the back of the car. Don't have me work on the front of the car because your Uncle Rufus from West Virginia tells you that it's in the front of the car when the vibration's in the seat of your pants. And so I love it when they come in and they go, you know, you drive down the road and I drive around town and everything is just fine. But when I get on the highway, the car drifts to the right. Okay, well, it's supposed to drift to the right because the highway is crowned. We have to, the highway can't be completely flat like oftentimes city streets are. But anything with a crowned road that runs the water to the right side of the road, the car will naturally follow that crown, that little bit of change of elevation. And if you wanted us to, we'll just kind of make a tweak to the alignment, and the car will go straight down the road on a crowned road. But if you get on a flat road, like a highway, like most highways, then it's going to have a little drift to the left. So what do you want? What do you drive on? And this is something that happens twice a year, so it's not a real common problem. I'm using it as an example. So if you want to drive around the city and you're a taxicab driver and you want it to go straight on a crowned road, then I can do that. And if you're on the highway and you want it to go straight down the highway, I can do that. But if I start tickling that car, I can't give you both. 99% of the time, I can't give you both. But if you come in and says, it blows blue smoke first thing in the morning, then never again during the day, I know where to go. If you come in and say, when I hit 66 miles an hour, it falls on its face, the engine does, and then if I turn off the air conditioning, I can go to 68 miles an hour. I already know where to go. It's a fuel pressure problem. If you'll just tell us those kinds of things, if you say to us, I have a vibration and I can feel it in the seat of my pants or in the steering wheel, or I can feel the whole car shake. When we hear the whole car shakes, it's in the back of the car. So the wives come in and they go, it's got a really bad vibration. It shakes the whole car and my husband wants you to rebuild the front end. And I'm thinking to myself, well, if I rebuild the front end, we're talking about $1,000 or more. But if you let me work on the back of the car, I'll find and fix the problem back there. Because this vibration, according to your symptoms, is in the back of the car. It's not in the front of the car. So the back of the car shakes your butt. The front of the car shakes the steering wheel. It's that simple. I don't care what kind of car you got. It's that simple. And we're not going to get into a discussion on this show. So those of you that want to talk electric cars, we're not talking electric cars. We're not going to do that. It's just not something I want to dive into. And there's so many strong feelings on both sides of the issue, the how much electricity it takes to charge the car and this and that and the batteries and the contamination. None of that makes any difference because they aren't going to do away with gasoline cars in my lifetime. There's way too much infrastructure in the United States that has to do with gasoline and oil and all the infrastructure associated with gasoline. It's not going to go away. And so all of a sudden we're not going to need gas stations, and all of a sudden we're not going to need this. Well, we still need tire repairs, and we still need, you know, suspension work and brake work and all that kind of stuff. But now that we have this electric motor, oil changes go out the window, so we don't need half the oil. Half the oil that the United States uses is probably for cars. So all of a sudden that just blows away in the wind. And likewise, safety reasons, evidently the electric cars are really good safety-wise. Good. I'm happy. But that's just a conversation we're going to leave alone because I don't have enough knowledge, and there's just a whole lot of stuff out there that I read about that I don't believe, and it's written by people who that conveniently leave out their credentials, how they came to that, you know. So those are the kinds of things. But if you have a motorhome, if you have any kind of car or truck. If you have a motorcycle that failed emissions, really what comes out of the tailpipe on your motorcycle is exactly the same as what comes out of the tailpipe on your car. Those are the kinds of things we can help you with. So the lines are open, 602-508-0960. If you're toll-free, if you want to call from outside the Phoenix metropolitan area, then it's 888-960-9696. One more time, 888-960-9696. That's because I work for the Patriot KKNT on 960 AM in Phoenix. And that's the reason why everything's 960, 960. just I'll cover up for the last 2 minutes of the show. I'll tell you that I was born and raised in southern Arizona. I've been working on cars since I was probably 10 years old, helping the adults around me. I went to high school. I took auto mechanics, and I was blessed by Ben Elkins at Tempe High to advance me to the senior class auto mechanics, which was a two-hour course, and he handpicked the people. If he were here today, he'd tell you that was a tough decision because Mark Salem was an ornery SOB, and he's right. But anyway, he did take me into his senior class. I did graduate his senior class, and as I came out of high school, I was a policeman. And then in 1979, I decided I wanted to work on cars again, and I opened up a gas station in Ahwatukee in 1979. And I've since then, I don't work that gas station anymore, but I've been working on cars in my own shop in Tempe since 1994. So between 79 and I had garages different places in Tempe. I'm an ASE Master Certified Technician, and I work for insurance companies and law enforcement, and I answer questions like, and did this car really have a flat tire before or after the crash? And did the fuel system fail? And what caused the fire? What area of the fire? All that kind of stuff. So, but I'm also very skilled in telling the truth, regardless of whose feelings it might hurt. So that, again, 602-508-0960. Well, welcome back, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We have Tina on the line, and we have four open lines. If you have a car question, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Tina, I want to tell you something. Gil talks to me in my headphones. Sometimes he tells me stories, and sometimes he tells me jokes or whatever. So then he says to me, you got a 101 on line four. And I don't have to ask anything about that because as a former policeman, a 101 is a female. And but I'm surprised that he used that terminology. But nevertheless, I don't mean to be offensive. He has said, you got a hairy-chested guy with a mouthful of marbles on line six. And I ask him, well, how do you know he's hairy-chested? But nevertheless, Tina, we know that you have my attention. How can I help you?
Well, he's funny. Thank you, Mark. Yes, I have a broken heart. No, I'm kidding.
Okay.
I'm kidding. I just had to say that.
That's
but
good.
No, I do have a couple issues on my car.
Okay.
And I wanted to ask you, there's actually two issues on my car, and I wanted to talk to you about them.
Okay.
So I have a 2006 Lexus GS300 with 202,900 miles on it.
Okay.
And it's been a really good car, but in the last, I don't know, 6-8 months, I need front suspension issues and had issues there, so I new struts. So I've gotten a couple quotes and a couple, this was ridiculous, Lexus dealership, forget it, too much. Then Pep Boys, and they were going to work with me on it. But long story short, what I ended up doing is I ended up buying, thought I could handle it kind of myself with a friend that is a repair mechanic. He's a good guy. He actually works in a shop, so he knows what he's doing. And we ordered full assembly struts, front full assembly struts from online partsgeek.com. And got him, and he replaced, it was great, but it didn't really work well, because...
Okay, stop.
Sure.
Stop. We've gone this far, but I don't know what the symptoms were, and that's where we need to start. I want to know what the car was doing at the very beginning to see if I agree with the struts were bad. So tell me, what was it doing?
Okay, it seemed low on the road, seemed lower than normal.
Okay.
It was squeaking very bad around, like, corners and on bumps, squeaking. And let's see. And when I took it to the car shop, especially Pep Boys, they said, yes, you need new front struts.
Okay, well, I don't agree with that because your symptoms don't match that. So... I mean,
I think you're, and I can already tell you're right, because it's really the bushings that need to be replaced.
Well, yeah, but we don't normally have customers tell us that the bushings, they can hear the bushings because, you know, you can spray them with some Armor All or rubber treatment and sometimes knock the noise right out of them. But we don't usually, and if there is a noise from a bushing that's dry, it's typically intermittent and it's not all the time. So I know that you've got 200,000 miles on the car. What we're missing here, Tina, is that somebody should have diagnosed this. When we replace struts, and you spent a hell of a lot of money on struts, when we replace those, there are specific symptoms. We've got a tire wear issue that's related to the collapse of the bushing on the strut or the strut itself. We've got a knocking noise. We've got an oil leak at the strut. We've got something that we can't align it because the strut is failed so bad. We have lots of different symptoms, but we work off of symptoms. And it's you're working off of, you know, popular mechanics. And I think what we should do first is we should have somebody look at the symptoms and determine what happens if they call you back and they say you need two lower bushings on one side and that's all you need. What happens then? So that's kind of what needs to happen.
Not gonna be happy.
What part town do you live in?
Kind of Desert Ridge.
Okay, North I-17.
Desert Ridge, you know. No, actually, Desert Ridge, Tatum and 101.
Okay. Well, I would make an appointment at Blackwell's at 40th and Greenway and just tell them I want to take someone for a short ride. I promise not to have them for more than 15 or 20 minutes. I'm very capable, and I've been practicing on making my car to make the noise or make the feel, and I'd like to take someone for a ride, and then I'd like you to diagnose it and give me an estimate. That's how it should properly be handled. And you can say, is there a charge for the diagnosis or the test drive? For me to demonstrate the problem, and if there is, usually we have, some shops have a $25 minimum, some of them have a $50 minimum, because a lot of times what happens is you end up fixing the car for the $50. So I'm going to tighten this bolt, or I'm going to spray a little of this here, and now you're set. So, that's what I would do. If you're up in Desert Ridge, and I recognize that's at the 101 and the 202 up north, then I would call Blackwell. He's your closest shop.
Right. Right. Okay. Yes. All right. Well,
did anybody align it? Did you align it after they put the new struts on?
No.
Well, that's a really bad move because the struts are adjustable, and that's how we align cars. And when we're aligning the cars, we're actually using the thickness of a hair to set the alignment. And so now you run the risk of damaging one or both of the front tires because no one aligned it. So the path you took wasn't really the best path for you. The only suggestion I make is you diagnose it first and then you decide what you're going to do. You might have diagnosed it, and let's pretend it was front shocks. At that point, you can call some of the shops like Pep Boys and Firestone and those lower tiered shops and ask them to price you a pair of struts. Then you can go to the independent auto repair shops that are owned by guys and families and stuff, and then you can go to the dealer, and you can do a lot of that over the telephone, and then you can sit down and decide what you want to do. But there's three tiers of experience. I have guys that have worked for me for 20 years, Ron and Eddie and my son Alan, and Jeff and Sean, and these guys are all master techs, and this would have been, on a 1 to 10 scale to diagnose your car, would have been a 3 for them. But I also have guys that change oil, young men that work for me, and for them, it would be a 9. So if I need a diagnosis, I'm going to use the old guys with gray hair, and you can tell an old technician because his fingernails are greasy, and you can tell he's old because he has hair in his ears and probably in his nose, and you'll know that. But Blackwell's, you'll find plenty of those guys there, okay?
Okay, will do. I'll do that. And the second issue, Mark, is the engine light comes on periodically, and then it says check VSC. And I've looked up VSC manual quite a bit, and before that it seemed to have to do with the gas cap. But do you have any thoughts on that?
Well, I would have to look it up specifically. But, I mean, a cheap, if you want the best cheap gas, is everybody's going to tell you to go put a new gas cap on it, and you can do that if you want. But what's going on
is
the evaporative system is supposed to suck the fumes off your tank, the fumes, not the liquid gas, the fumes. We suck the fumes and we send them to the motor. So if the VSC is what you're talking about, then there's a problem there because the computer is commanding for this pump to do that or this valve to open up, and it's not happening. So the computer's setting a code saying, you know, I'm trying to do this evacuation, or I'm trying to suck the fumes off this tank, and I'm not seeing the success numbers. And so you have to go in and figure out what's the matter with it. Blackwell can do that too. There's three parts of that: to look at the code, then to interpret the code, and then do some testing to determine what in the system is defective, and then bid the repair. So there's actually four steps in there. And you can say to Blackwell, I don't want you to do the repair, I just want you to do the diagnosis. And he's going to sit down on the diagnosis. But you can't take, Tina, you can't take your car to another shop and have them do the repair that some other shop diagnosed, because you're going to get in the middle of two guys, and the second guy didn't do it right, but he wants to blame the first guy. The first guy says, no, I diagnosed it correctly. And then he's forced to fix the car from the second shop that screwed it up, and nobody wants to do that. So I know in our shop, we just don't get in the middle of those kinds of things. We just don't get in the middle of them. If somebody comes in and says, I have a diagnosis, I want you to look at it too, no, we're not doing that. We're just not doing that. That's just the recipe for disaster for the customer, for the customer. Mm-hmm. So you've already spent a lot of money, and I'm sorry that happened. I wish you'd have called me last week or last month, but
I've been listening to you a while, Mark, and I was like, I need to call him, but I just didn't have, I don't know, I just didn't know if I had the info to call you. But on the check engine light, I have noticed on my car, it does have more exhaust smell, a stronger exhaust smell.
Okay.
I don't know.
Well, and
here or whatever.
Okay. Now, when I hear that, I know that it's running rich.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And so there's a lot of things that can make the fuel economy fall. So I'm going to say, the first thing I'm going to say is, hey, Tina, how's your fuel economy? And I'm hoping you're going to give me the truth. And the truth is, I don't notice any difference. It's gone down. It's gone up. Those are the three answers. I don't know. It's gone up or it's gone down. Those are the three answers. But if you say, I can make it happen, I have to drive on the freeway for 6 miles, then I can get off the exit, I can zip over to, let's pretend, Blackwell shop. You zip over to Blackwell shop, and it'll stink right there. Boom. Come on, let's do it. So I'll have somebody out in the parking lot, and you go drive and come in. Then we smell it, and we go, yeah, it's running rich. So now we have to figure out, why is there too much fuel being delivered to your engine? And why isn't your engine converting that fuel to power? And now we're in the diagnostic process. And in your car, under those circumstances, 8 out of 10 times, when you find it, it's this. It's $126.75 to find it, and it's $4.50 to fix it, because I got to plug this hose in because it came out.
Right.
Or
something
silly. That's the bottom. So, anyway, got to run, Tina. Thank you very much. We have open lines available at 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We have 5 lines open, and Gil is our engineer. He's driving the train. He's the one that edits out all the bad words I use and all the stupid things I say, so that when we post all of our radio shows on the website, you can go in. Now, if you go to my website, marksalem.com, you can look at the shows without the commercials. So really, instead of a 2-hour show, it's an hour and 30 minutes. And the shows there sans the commercials. So if you want to do that, marksalem.com, and you can listen to any show you want. We'll be right back. Welcome back, everybody. 20 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. We're going to go straight to the phones because Joan has been waiting some period of time. And Joan, I'm going to take you right out of the chute. How can I help you today?
Thank you very much, Mark. Happy New Year to you, and I appreciate you taking my call. My daughter has a 2005 Chevy Cobalt, about 98,000 miles on it, and it won't start. But it's driven and has been parked outside for about 2 years. I don't know if it has any gas. or oil in it. So I originally was going to call AAA to come and check the battery. And if the battery was good, you know, we got a new one, I would drive it to a dealer, you know, I mean, an auto shop, to, you know, get checked out for, you know, the, you know, 98,000-mile checkup and all that stuff. But someone told me not to do that. They said that it has to be, the gas tank has to be drained and cleaned out first. And I did call a auto shop, and they said, they kind of laughed at me and said, that's a very expensive thing to do.
Okay, stop. We have just gone so far afoul from the fence. Let me ask you some questions. When
sure.
you try to start the car, what happens?
It doesn't start.
Does it go rrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrrr?
No, nothing.
So when you hit the key, nothing happens. Okay.
Right.
Well, you can't. Let's start at the beginning of your story because I'm going to lose my. You've overloaded my RAM, so to speak. We have to charge a battery before we can condemn it. There's no such thing as going out to your car and saying, "Oh, the battery has 8 volts; it's bad." No, it doesn't. You have to charge it. The only way you can test a battery is when you charge it first. You can test a battery at 8 volts and they all fail. But that doesn't mean it's bad. You have to charge it first. So why don't you take your car, have somebody take the battery out of your car and take it to the local AutoZone and have them charge it and test it. Why don't you do that? And then if it needs a new battery, you can buy a battery from them and then you can have someone install it in your car. That will get the engine to crank over. Somehow or another, we went from a no start because the engine doesn't crank to a fuel system problem, but we don't know it's a fuel system problem until we get the motor to crank over. And if it cranks over and it has no fuel, then you check fuel pressure and you check the fuel pump relay and you make sure that everything's working and that we're forcing fuel forward to the engine. I don't know how we got to cleaning out the fuel tank. I only do that once every 3 years.
Oh, okay. Well, someone who has worked on cars said that I have to do that, otherwise I'm going to ruin the car if I don't have it.
Okay, well, we're going to take him out of the library of experts, okay? We're going to take him and shove him aside. Go ahead.
Okay. All right, then I was told by a couple auto shops to get Lucas Octane Booster.
Okay, we're not going to put anything in the gas tank because that's not going to fix anything. Let's move on. You really think? No, I know you don't, but no one believes you're going to put something in the gas tank and make it start when you hit the key, nothing happens? We have to have three things. We have to have the engine go rrr, 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 and we need spark and fuel. You don't have the engine going rrr, 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 rrr. You don't even know if you have spark or fuel because the engine won't crank. So all of a sudden, these experts are telling you what to do. Do they know that the engine doesn't crank? Do they know that there's no electrical supply to the engine? Do they know the battery's dead? How can they diagnose your car over the phone and tell you that you have no spark or no fuel when no one can get the thing to crank over? So it's, you know, I know that you've talked to a lot of people. The best advice is have somebody tow it to a shop that's reputable and say to them, it doesn't crank over. Another thing you could do, do you have AAA or towing or anything like that?
Yes.
Okay, you can have it towed anywhere you want. What part of town do you live in?
In Fountain Hills.
Okay, Fountain Hills. Oh, I know who you could go up. Fountain Hills. Doggone it. I don't know anybody. You know, I'm going to tell you, I think there's, yes, there is. There's a AAA auto repair shop that's tied to the towing company. I think it's a company operation. I think that's your best move because of your geographic location. I would call AAA. They're going to ask you if they can tow it to their AAA-approved auto repair shop, and I suggest you say yes, and I suggest you say, I want them to call me before they do any work and explain what the diagnostic charges are going to be. That's what I think you should do.
So you're recommending a AAA auto repair shop would be a good place to start with.
That's the first time in 20 years I've ever done that. It's because of your geographical location. It's because of where you're at. And I used to tow for AAA, and I was at one time a AAA-approved independent auto repair shop. I objected to some of the they wanted it, in Mark Salem's opinion, they wanted me to treat their customers different than everybody else. And I just, that wasn't anything I could stomach. So I respectfully declined to renew my membership with AAA. And that goes back to the 80s. So I'm doing something I haven't done since the 80s. I'm recommending a AAA shop because of your geographic location. And I think you are best served for that.
Well, if I have it towed, I could really take it anywhere. I mean, I have a 100 miles of towing.
Okay, well, then I would take it to Action Auto. You can go to Action Auto at I-17 in Deer Valley.
I-17 in Deer Valley.
It's called Action Auto.
I would recommend them. Uh-huh.
You can go. Do you have access to the Internet?
Yes.
Go to MarkSalem.com.
Right.
Mark Salem, spelled like the cigarette. com,
right.
And then click on the best car repair shops and find one close to you. And all those shops are grade A shops as far as I'm concerned. And I know them personally. I have their cell phone numbers. And I want to tell you, I might field one complaint on that list of shops every 5 years.
Wow.
These guys know what they're doing, and they can fix your car.
What I want to know. Yes.
Okay.
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 Thank you so very much. Appreciate
okay. Good luck to you,
it.
Joan. You bet. Thank you. Folks, the message there is you can't get your car fixed by popular vote, because the first thing I was able to ask Joan was, does it crank over? And she said, no. Well, we need three things. We need the motor to go rrr, 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 and then we need spark and fuel delivered on time. And so even if it cranks over but doesn't catch, that means we're missing spark or fuel. Well, spark is spark plugs, wires, crankshaft sensor, camshaft sensor, a PCM, a bad ground. There's a variety of reasons why, but then if it's your fuel system, then it can be the fuel pressure regulator, it can be the fuel pump relay, or it can be the fuel pump. You see all those dynamics? So you can't possibly have somebody tell you that you need a fuel pump and to wash out your gas tank. We don't even know if it's a fuel-related problem. What we do know is we have a starting system and a charging system and a battery that have gone to heaven. Something's wrong in that. So we need a good battery to crank the engine over, and once the engine cranks over, then what happens is the computer sees the cranks and it yawns and it says, okay, I'll flip the switch for the spark and I'll flip the switch for the fuel. So fuel is sprayed into the engine, spark ignites it, the thing starts, it goes to 600 RPM, the computer goes, okay, I guess she wants to go to the Circle K. And that's what happens. So it's that simple. All right, if you have a car question or you want to talk about some problem with your car, or if you don't like what I'm saying, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. One of the best transmission shops in the entire town is at 40th Street in Washington. It's called Automatic Transmission Exchange. I know lots of shop owners. There's some I respect with all my heart, but there's a very few that I don't. And Automatic Transmission Exchange has been around since 1968, and Phil's a good guy, and he's a good transmission shop. So if you have a bad problem, then Automatic Transmission Exchange is the place I suggest you go. Okay, 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Auto Dynamics is in Sun City, and there's lots of shops in the Sun City area, but the only one I can personally recommend is Automotive Dynamics. I've known Chuck Nyday since the late 70s, early 80s. I know him. I know how he's wired. I know he's a good guy. I know he insists on perfection, sometimes probably a little too much perfection. However, I think as we get older and we get grayer, we're smarter. And so I can only tell you that they're on the north side of Grand, and just west of 99th Avenue, Automotive Dynamics, and it's the shop, the only shop, I'm sorry to tell you, in Sun City area that I can recommend. Let's go to the phones. Blyden, how are you today? What can we do for you?
First of all, good morning, Mark.
Good morning.
And I wanted to thank you and your staff for a informative show, which is greatly appreciated by many, many citizens here in the great state of Arizona.
Thank you.
Now, my question is this. I have a 2011 XJL, and when you open the door, this would be the front door, and you look right behind where the, let's say, the door lock.
Okay.
And you're inside the car. You look at the interior right next to the there's some cloth there. Are you same page?
Is it about the size of a dime, and is it round?
Oh, no. It goes from, so when you open the door and there's some material and I apologize. Basically, my problem is that the material is not attached to where it's supposed to be.
Okay, well, let me ask you a couple of questions. Is the material rubber and black?
No.
Okay.
No, it's cloth. So it's not. I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Is it part of the seat or the carpet?
No, not the carpet or the seat. It's in the. I don't want to say the door well, but. As I'm saying, when you open the door and you literally look to your right, and you'll see some material.
Okay.
And
it's on the inside of the door. When you close the door, it's on the inside of the car. It's not on the outside of the car.
Right. It's on the inside. Exactly.
Okay. Well, you're talking about a piece of weather stripping from the interior.
Maybe that's what that is. I don't know if it's weather stripping. As I said, and I apologize, Mark, for not being specific.
Well, let's just do this, Blyden. Let's just do this. We can't do this kind of back and forth because you don't know what you're talking about, and I can't guess. Let's do this.
Yeah.
I'm happy to do this. I want you to open the door, and I want you with your right finger to point at what you're talking about, and with your left hand, take a picture and send it to Mark at MarkSalem.com. Mark@MarkSalem.com. So just stand back. Yeah, Salem like the cigarette. Stand back, put your right hand, or have your wife out there and have her do the Vanna White with her finger, okay? And you take a picture.
Okay.
And don't include her head or anything like that, but just send me a picture of what you're talking about because I can address it. Real quick, is this thing a concern?
Yeah.
Is it coming apart? Is it starting to fray? What's the issue?
Yeah. Okay. Basically, it has separated. It's beginning to separate.
Okay. All right.
Right now, upholstery place. But what I'll do is I'll follow your directions and send it to you.
Okay, and that's fine. And if you also include a phone number, if I decide to call you back, I'm going to call you from a blocked line. Okay.
Okay.
And so, the first thing I'll say is, "This is Mark Salem. Don't hang up on me." And then you'll know it,
okay.
And then we can talk. So, yeah, do that. Thank you, Blyden. Thank you very much, Nick. How can I help you?
Hi, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Good. Thank you for asking.
Good. So, my question is—it's not a specific car question, but it's more about that Carfax thing. To keep that thing up to date, and is every shop whenever you go. Tires rotated, oil change, are they obligated to update that?
No, not at all. We're not obligated to update anything. The Carfax has the ability with certain people and certain groups of people, like dealerships and stuff, to have access to that kind of information so that they can post it. You can accomplish the goal I think you're trying to accomplish is when you buy a car, a used car, you should always ask for the maintenance records to look at the maintenance records before you buy the car. And if they don't have any maintenance records and it's got 80,000 miles on it, that means they probably just bought it at the auction and they washed it and waxed it and now they want to sell it for a big profit. On the other hand, you'll oftentimes find people with a three-ring notebook with all the tickets in it. Now there's your Carfax. Now the only thing you need to do on the Carfax is go ahead and ask for a Carfax, and here's why. There's a whole lot of body shops that will report via their insurance relationship the crashes on a car. So you're very likely, the Carfax will show any kind of body damage, any kind of collision, any kind of that kind of repair, a body shop repair. That's likely to be there. You're going to get the dealership stuff, but as you well know, and I can attest to, a whole lot of my customers don't go to the dealers. But Carfax is willing to buy my information. I'm just not willing to sell it because I feel as though I'd have to query all of my 65,000 customers, and I really don't have time to do that. But if someone like you were to come in and said, this car right here belongs to Joyce, and here's her phone number, and she said for you to print out all the repair orders on my car, please, I'd do it in a heartbeat. So if you talk to the owner of the used car, ask him who serviced it, and ask them if they can call the shop and get copies of all their repair orders. That's no problem.
Okay, great. It's something that I've been wondering because just getting oil changes, tire rotations, all that stuff, and you know, I always get either a shop does or doesn't report it, so I didn't know what.
Yeah, they're willing to pay its force, but I think there's a privacy. Mark Salem thinks there's a privacy issue there, and I can't commit for my customers without their authorization. And like I said, I've got 60,000 customers, and I can't possibly take the time to go ask them if that's okay. So that's kind of the push on it. Anyway, good luck to you, Nick. Thank you very much. That's an interesting question. I think that's the first time I've ever had that one. But I was able to have an answer, and I did better than just guess. I can tell you unequivocally how they gather that information. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. There's five of them, and we'll be right back. Anyway, real quick, let me tell you about Kurtz Automotive. Kurtz is one of my shops that's located at I-17 and Bell Road. And I've told you before, but it's worth saying again. I met Kurtz 100 years ago when I sent a lady to him because I had heard he had a good shop. And she had been told by numerous shops that she needed an engine because of an oil light, a red oil light on her dash. Kurtz fixed it with an oil pressure switch and sent her on her way, and I think the bill was $45. From that point on, I've sent lots of cars to Kurtz Auto Repair. He's at I-17 and Bell. And he pulls that kind of thing about 10% of the time. They've been told this, and it really wasn't that. It's this. But he's smart enough to know that sometimes he's going to be worse than what they were told. I think you need this, but really, yes, you need this. But Kurtz is a great guy from oil changes to diagnosis. And you can tell him I said that he does yard... He gets mad when I say he can fix your weed eater too. Anyways, I-17 and Bell Road, northeast corner, Kurtz Automotive, and Kurtz is spelled with a C. Let's go to the phones. Harry, how are you?
Fine, how are you? Shout out to Kurtz. He's a good shop.
Well, thank you. And you are a customer of his.
I am. For 10 or 15 years at least.
Well, thank you for that.
Wish you a happy new year and everything. I've got a question on oil. I know you're an oil expert, and I'm seeing a lot of the 016 oil. And my questions are, is that backward compatible to, say, a vehicle that has 020? Seems kind of strange that they use 16 instead of 15. And is it a better oil, or is it a new generation of oil that can be used on older vehicles?
Well, we're talking about a synthetic, right?
Right.
Yes,
right.
Okay. All right. Zero means it flows like a 08 when it's cold, but I think, Harry, you'll agree that in Phoenix, cold is not an adjective we use in the morning. So, but my truck loves a 020 synthetic, my Dodge diesel. And zero flows like a 08 when it's cold, and I want the oil not to be peanut butter first thing in the morning. I want it to be like real water. I want it to flow gently and quickly and easily. So, and then it flows like a 50 weight when it's hot, or flows like a 20 weight when it's hot, or whatever. All of that's backward compatible. You're not going to hurt your engine. Your engine doesn't have any way of knowing if you put horse urine in there or if you use a synthetic or a semi-synthetic or whatever. It doesn't know. It doesn't care. You can do anything you want, and you can change back and forth brands and weights because it doesn't know. the old wives' tale says, once you start using Havilland, you have to use Havilland for the rest of your life. That was a lie then, and it's a lie now. So, yeah, if you want to use a thin... Here again, just for the rest of them, Harry, and you too. The engine has many pieces rubbing together very tight. So you put your hands in a prayer position, and like you're warming up your hands, and you go... And you do that. That's what your engine's all about. The thinner the oil we get in, it provides better lubrication, carries the heat away, and provides all kinds of great protection because it's thin as opposed to peanut butter, which is the 30s and 40s and 50 weights. So we know now that oil with the consistency of water makes our engines last longer, carries the heat away, carries the trash away, and is far better for the environment than those big peanut butter oils that we had in the 70s. So if you wanted to back up from 0.20 to a 0.15, check with Kurtz, but I wouldn't have any objection to that at all.
Well, I did see more of it. I thought, well, I wonder if this is a new generation of oil that, is just better oil.
Well, it's not going to be, Harry, it's not going to be better oil. It's just going to have different parameters. And the parameters you're talking from a 0.15 to a 0.20, we're talking about the thickness of an eyelash. It's no big deal.
Right.
So if you're real happy with the 0.20 and that's what Kurtz has got, I'd stick with the 0.20.
Yeah, that's what I've just been seeing more of the 0.16, which kind of struck me as odd, 16 instead of maybe 15, because that's kind of what the increments have gone. Yeah. Years and years. So,
well, if you and I were in the oil building business and we sold engine oil, then if there was a 0.10 and a 0.20, I think the marketing guys would tell us to come in at a 0.16 and be different.
Yeah.
Okay, Harry, thank you very much, buddy. Thank you. Chuck, you're up next. How can I help you?
Hey, Mark, I was wondering, should you ever add water to a maintenance?
Add water to what?
A maintenance-free battery.
Have I ever? And the answer is yes.
Okay. The reason why I ask is I have a motorcycle, and it wouldn't start, put a new battery in it, pulled the old battery. It was very low on water, and I put some water in it, put a charge on it, and went up to about 12.6 volts. Seems to be holding. So I'm wondering, maintenance-free, is that just more planned obsolescence for a battery because you don't put water in it, and especially in Arizona, that water evaporates out?
Well, a maintenance-free battery is supposed to have its own little rainstorm environment. So we're going to turn the acid to a vapor. It's going to go to the top of the battery. Then we're going to condense it from a vapor to a liquid, and then it's going to rain back down in the battery. That's how it's supposed to work. Sometimes we have electrical systems, like your motorcycle. We typically, on the electrical systems, run in the vicinity of 14, maybe 15 volts. But there's some of them out there that will run higher than 15 volts under certain circumstances. Well, that's when we start heating up the water in the battery. That's when we start heating up the battery because we're adding a little bit more electricity to it than it was really designed to. And then it probably will throw some of the vapor out the vent hose. And then that's got condensed water or acid in it, and that's why the battery's low. In your case, I would have done this. I would have peeled the top off that battery, and I would have added some distilled water or some regular tap water to each one of the cells and bring them up to the line. I would have put a slow charge on it. I would have let it charge up and then cool down a couple of times. Then I'd have put it back in the motorcycle, and I would put a voltmeter on it. And then I would look for, when I crank it over, I need to know where the voltage goes from and to. I start at 14.2. Good. That's good. Or 13.2. I don't care. That's good. And it only drops a volt when I start my motorcycle up. That's good. The floor is really 9.6. 9.6 is the floor. Oh, okay. Drops below 9.6 and throw it away. So that's something that you could have done, just put water in. Of course, you didn't know you needed water till you took it out, and you probably already had the new one then. And so
I already bought the battery and put it in.
So I understand your dilemma. But, you know, try it and see what happens. But see, the battery can shine a 12-volt light for a long time, but the amp draw on a 12-volt light is 1 amp. But the starter in your motorcycle is going to be between 90 and 150 amps. So when we want the battery to turn itself inside and out and give us a lot of power. That's called the load test. It may very well fail the load test, but it's still good, and it'll give you 12 volts for a long period of time if it's going to run one filament. That's not the battery you want on your motorcycle.
Gotcha.
So, for future reference.
Next time before I do it, I'll check the level of the water.
Yeah, and you know what? So will I, because I just went out to my Honda trike. Oh, by the way, if anybody out there wants a Honda trike, I'm getting ready to sell mine. A Honda Goldwing trike, independent rear suspension, all black. Beautiful, 25,000 miles. Mark at MarkSam.com. Thanks for giving me that chance, Chuck. But anyway, thank you. That's a great question. That's a great question. Thank you very much. All righty, 602-508-0960, 602-508-09. Oh, actually, we're going to be off the air here in about, 4 minutes? So I'll just talk it to the end of the hour unless somebody comes.
We do have a caller.
Oh, go. Who is it?
Say hello to David.
David, good morning. How are you? David? David?
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Go right ahead.
Can you hear me?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Hold on. Sorry, I had it on speaker. Probably wasn't picking up well.
It's okay.
Quickly, yeah. I have a Lexus. It's a 2017. It's a 300 hybrid.
Okay.
And I got this weird thing when I back up slowly out of the garage. It makes this, as I touch the brakes, it makes this clicking noise. It sounds like it's coming from the front, wheel assembly.
Okay.
Doesn't do it when I'm in forward gear, only when I'm in backward, backing up. And I have to take this in to get it checked, and I just want to have some idea of maybe what this might be.
What you're best served by, let's just change your focus a little bit. I need you to get somebody else involved, and I need you to be standing by the headlight on the driver's side and have them back it up, and you need to be their ears. Then you move over to the passenger side. Then you move over to the passenger door. Then you move over to the closed driver's door. You need to triangulate the noise and determine where it's coming from. In the absence of any lights on the dashboard, any warning lights, I'm thinking that it might be a pad that's clicking, and it might be a brake pad that I would never suggest that you do this, but probably take them out, clean them up, put them back in. It would be good if it's hanging up just a little bit, but that's just a huge waste of time. But what really needs to happen is you need to say, here's the 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 of this, and I can tell you unequivocally, I put my hand on the top of the fender on the driver's side, and I can feel the click, or I put my hand on the wheel as they back out slowly, and I can feel the click. If you came into my shop like that, they'd probably hug you, because you come in with information nobody else has.
Okay, I'll give it a try.
Okay, good luck to you. The more information you can give with symptoms is just symptoms, and the answers to the questions from the shop is yes, no, or I don't know. We're really not interested in what Google said on the internet. You don't want to pay for us to chase Google's idea about what's wrong with your car. If you come in and tell us that in the morning when I start the car up, there's some clicking noise goes on underneath the dash, then we say to you, okay, well, we want you to try, and we want you to start the car up this whole week with the defrost set in defrost, and then next week we want you to set it for center vent air, and then the third week we want you to set it for floor air, and we want to know if the noise changes. And you come back and you go, yes, it goes away when I move it to the center vent or the floor vents. Okay, well, then we got a clicking noise in the motor that redirects the air to the windshield. You've just saved yourself $100 worth of diagnosis. $100. At least $100. Because now we know how to duplicate it. That's important. So don't be afraid of and even writing it down. And everybody has phones. Take a picture or turn on the recording device and say, I was standing here, and you can hear me say to my wife, okay, start the car up. There's no clicking going on. Okay, honey, put it in reverse. She puts it in reverse. No clicking, but she lets go of the brakes, and there's a clicking. And you can definitely hear it on the driver's side front tire a lot more than all the rest of them. That's the kind of stuff that we need. That's the kind of stuff that's going to save you a lot of money in the diagnostic procedure. Otherwise, we're going to have that car for 2 or 3 days as we try to make it happen. And there's a good chance we're not going to be able to. And you'll be frustrated, and so will we. All right, Mark at MarkSalem.com. My email address is Mark at MarkSalem.com. My website is MarkSalem.com. Salem is spelled like the cigarette, M-A-R-K-S-A-L-E-M. And I'll see you next Saturday here at KKNT 960.